Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Penny, who has been the steward of the Monastery Garden for the past number of years, and she's agreed to be with us this afternoon to talk about an exciting new vision for the garden. Welcome, Penny.
Jen, I think we just lost her.
We lost her again, huh?
She was just there long enough for me to click on her.
Well, here's the thing. She's actually at the monastery, and I'm not. And as we know, the signal in the at the monastery can be tricky.
Yes.
So we might give her, I know she's got a backup landline, we might give her just another minute to see if she can rejoin us.
Sure.
So, Michael, in the meantime, I wonder if we might bring Sherry live, because she happens to also know the vision for the garden.
Sure.
And then when we get Penny back, she could jump in and participate.
Okay. Sherry, I've just brought you live now. Oh, and I see Penny, too. It's a party. Okay.
Sherry.
Hello, Jen.
Oh, hey, Penny.
My phone somehow it just didn't go through, so I have another phone.
Okay, excellent. So I don't know if you heard my introducing you, just saying that you've been the steward of the Monastery Garden for the last, I'm not sure even how many years, but quite a number of years you've been involved with it and recently really stepped forward to take just about full responsibility for it, really be the captain for it, and that you agreed to be with us this afternoon to talk about the vision for the next steps with the garden.
Right.
So
the vision for the next step actually comes from Sherry, and it's to make the garden a peace garden.
Yeah,
and
say more.
I don't know that any of us actually knows exactly what that means. We have two garden plots at the monastery, a lower one and an upper one, and it's really far more garden than can be managed as just a food garden.
Uh-huh.
So we have just been focused on the upper garden the last few years, and even that is too much, especially during retreat season when everybody's just so busy. So what we looked at, what Sherry was looking at, I think, was to make the garden a place where some vegetables are grown, and then the rest of it would be kinds of planting and paths and places to sit and places to kind of meditate, where a person could wander through, and it could be a meditation site, you know, as well as a functional food garden and as well as growing plants.
And it's always been a beautiful spot right there. It's in a prime location right next to the main building.
Right.
And so often retreatants do enjoy walking in there and going about, but to consciously make it a place that can be kind of an extension of a place to meditate, a place to sit, a place to be quietly. So to put places that you could actually stop and sit and enjoy the beauty of being in there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a garden actually sort of goes downhill. It has a sort of a flat area as you enter, which has been a flower bed that's been revived and is now quite lovely. And then it would be really neat going downhill. Our idea is that the downhill part is where the peace garden would go, and so the paths would sort of wind downhill, and so they'd be at different levels. So when you're sitting at a given level, you have a little bit of privacy because you're not quite at the same level as other people. So the terrain even lends itself to that.
I'm sorry, say that last part again?
The terrain lends itself.
The terrain, yes.
To doing something like that.
Yeah.
What we're looking for, I think, we talked about inviting a local garden center people who have been very nice to us to just walk around with us and see what they have to say about what kind of plantings would create that kind of ambiance we're talking about. And because we live in a place, you know, that doesn't rain half the year, they would be drought tolerant, real adapted, maybe native plants, really adapted to the area. So they don't require much maintenance and they fit the area where we live.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's perfect. So another piece of it is really consciously deciding what's going to go in there, what makes sense to go in there, what makes sense from where we live, and what can be maintained naturally in our area of the world.
Yes, and what can be maintained just in terms of, you know, our people power here.
and our peoples are.
The easier it is to maintain, then the more people can enjoy it, and it isn't something that becomes a kind of a burden.
Yeah.
That Sherry has envisioned too, which is across where the lower garden used to be, to create a labyrinth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could be quite wonderful.
Right. So for, I suppose most people do know what a labyrinth is, but I actually, before I came and started doing retreats with Monastery, I actually didn't know what a labyrinth was. But I've been to places where we've had retreats, venues away from the monastery that have had labyrinths, and they're really quite a nice walking meditation opportunity.
They are. For people who don't know them, they're kind of a maze sort of path, except that it's continuous, and so you always know where you are, but you sort of wind in and out. And it is, in fact, a walking meditation practice, and quite ancient. You know that it goes back to. There's a kind of labyrinth that's called a Cretan labyrinth that goes back to the, you know, far prehistoric times. And then the most famous kind of labyrinth is the kind that was at Chartres Cathedral. And that's the one that's most often you find outside of churches and things like that.
And have we talked yet about sort of what that would be made out of? Because I think they're all different kinds of. Some are just sort of markings on a path. Some are made with bushes. Some are all different ways, I think.
No, we don't. We haven't even begun to talk about how to construct it, except to say that it might really be fun to construct it with retreatants on one or more retreats.
Yeah, to have peace garden retreats.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, very fun. Yeah, to participate in creating it, which is true of everything on the monastery property, that,
right.
You know, people who come on retreat and you know, boy, there's that building I helped create, and there's that, you know, gazebo I worked on, and there's the, you know, people who've been around for a long time helped create the main building that houses everything for the retreats.
That's right. And, you know, having a peace garden, you just reminded me that having a peace garden, which has both the meditative part and then the functional part of growing food, just seems so consistent, not only with Zen practice, but with this place, you know, where...
Yeah.
You know, the building was created from the soil it sits on. And
yes.
We create our own solar power, and we are really careful about water and that kind of thing. So having a garden seems very much like simply an extension of the different dimensions of life here.
Yes, yeah. And I think I heard, as we were discussing it, I think it was during precepts when you were giving us a little tour of what things are going to happen and that sort of thing, that we're going to keep some vegetable garden element to it, because of that extension of really wanting to keep the spirit of providing for ourselves some of the things that we cook in the monastery kitchen.
Yeah, you know, we talked about for a while not having a vegetable garden at all, and then it just seemed like, we just can't have a Zen monastery without a vegetable garden, because it's a part of how we link to the land.
Yes.
And today I watched someone walk in with a huge bowl full of tomatoes right out of the garden, and I just thought, they taste different when we raise them ourselves, and they link us to the place in a totally powerful physical way.
Yeah, and it's such a good reminder of when that happens. One of the things we do is have this amazing fresh tomato soup. I think it may have even, actually the recipe may have gone out in the newsletter. I'm not sure. If it hasn't, it should.
Yes.
And truly, all it is just tomatoes from the garden. I mean, that's what that soup is. And it's such a good reminder that when it's tomato season, we eat fresh tomato soup.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of the extension of when it's hot, we sweat, when it's cold, we shiver. When it's tomato season, we eat tomato soup.
That's right. Especially when the weather's cool and we have a salad, the lettuce comes from the garden and the kale comes from the garden. It's just
thing. Yeah.
And by the way, if that fresh tomato soup recipe hasn't gone out, please send it out, because I walked by today and thought, I want that recipe myself.
Yeah, it's a really, really good soup. So, Penny, we're coming up against the time. Anything else that you wanted to add before we end?
No, except that to say I'm standing here by the garden right now and looking at tomatoes and looking at flowers, and it would be a very different place to stand were all those living things not there.
Uh-huh, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it, because I just think that that's such a fun idea, to have places where you can actually sit and enjoy it. Because right now, you spend a few minutes in there, but there's no place to really sit and be. So I think that will be just a beautiful addition. So thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for your service and your stewardship of the garden.
Thank you, Jen.
Okay, good night. All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Penny. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I was
great.
Picturing that garden as Penny and Jen were talking about it. We have such big plans for it. It is, as they indicated, it's already beautiful, and it's very sparse compared to our vision for it. And it's fun. And I hope people who like to grow things and create that sort of thing, we'll keep an eye out for on the schedule for when a couple of those retreats come up where people can come and help plant and create the peace garden, and then especially when it's time to create the labyrinth. That's going to be a special time, too.
Yeah, it sounds very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
And yeah.
I have some announcements here.
What you got? What's going on?
Well, you can see the potential new garden site at the Rest and Be Thankful weekend retreat at the monastery. That's October 19th through 21st. There's time for meditation, group discussion, a workshop, and rest in the schedule.
Great. I thought that was full, but there must be a couple of slots left. I hope so, because wouldn't it be awful to think, I really need some rest and time for gratitude, and then you try to sign up and it's full, so I'm hoping there's some spaces.
I hope so, too.
Mm-hmm.
Folks can bring in the new year with Sangha at the annual New Year's retreat with you, Sherry. This includes meditation, group discussions, yoga, guidance with you, Sherry, delicious vegetarian food, and free time to spend in nature on the center's spacious grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be in a new location in Menlo Park, California. Spacious wooded grounds and private rooms with attached private baths.
And I think there's, I can't remember, but there is a cutoff date for signing up for that retreat. Can't remember what it is. But I just saw a report come through, and I will encourage people, it's filling up fast.
Oh.
So if anybody's out there kind of on the fence, this happened a lot in this past retreat season. People would think, it's probably not going to, and they would try to sign up for a retreat. And I think past the first retreat of the year, all of our retreats were full.
Wow.
So that's just a little word to the wise that people don't want to wait too late.
Yes.
We have some sort of deal with them where we have to give them the final number 30 days out from the retreat or something like that. And so, just for people to keep that in mind, it's not one, if you wait till a couple of weeks before, it'll be too late. I mean, not for on our end, but on theirs, registration will be closed. So people want to keep that in mind.
Right. I'm just pulling up the date right now. Deadline to sign up is November 24th, yes.
Okay, good. I guess people have a little while.
And the dates for that retreat are December 27th through January 1st. And folks can visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to read more or sign up for any of these retreats. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. And with that, let's get started.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jim in Charlotte.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Good. I'm good. And yourself?
Well, I thought I'd better call in today because I had a long weekend and I had yesterday off, and I was really in a very centered place and had kind of gotten back on track with some commitments. And I got to work, and immediately when I got to work, I got triggered, and I was really in a very identified place. And then I started to, after I was able to catch myself, I thought, well, what happened right before I got here? And, you know, how did this, and I tried to, you know, sort of understand the process a little bit and where this story came up. And I couldn't, and I was, and I wrote a little bit about it, and I've talked to Sherry B. some about this and tried some of those suggestions, and just a kind of a warning, I'm still caught up in these stories, and I'm still very identified, and so I apologize for that, the story is kind of like, well, you know, no matter how kind I am to myself, it's like, or how many good things I do for myself, it won't matter as long as I'm in this job, and I can't really like record and listen to make this not feel bad while I'm here. I guess it's sort of the story that is very believable for me right now, and it's kind of like it's just kind of minute by minute to keep me from just going up to my boss and just saying I can't do this anymore and quitting, in a very just passive aggressive. I felt a lot of hateful feelings and hateful to my coworkers, which made me feel even more kind of like, oh, this is my fault, because if I'm feeling like, oh, that, you know, I'm thinking hateful thoughts about somebody, it's never them, it's me, and I'm understanding this just intellectually, so it's just more kind of ammunition, and so it's kind of minute by minute to keep me from quitting, but also I'm like, I listened to the recording on my way to work this morning that is basically just a quote from one of your books that says, I refuse to allow myself to believe that I'm trapped in a reality that I can't control. It's something like that.
Jim, can I ask you a personal question?
Yes.
A personal question? How old are you?
Yeah. How old am I?
Mm-hmm.
39.
And how long have you been doing awareness practice?
Cool. I would say like fairly, like, I've been doing it for about a year, like, kind of like I got introduced to your books and stuff like that, but like consistently I could be proud of what it's just like consistent for maybe four months maybe.
Okay. Can you imagine where I'm going to go with this?
No.
Well,
I give it some time.
Yeah. So, you know, we Buddhists, you know, we talk in terms of kalpas, right? Do you know what a kalpa is?
No.
Okay, I don't either. But this is the story that I've heard, okay? And, you know, it's a rather fanciful sort of a story about something that probably has nothing to do with, I don't even know if it's a word, Jim, but this is the story I've been told. There's a huge, huge mountain of granite. And once every 10,000 years, an angel comes by and she rushes the top of the mountain with her wing. And when the mountain is gone, a kalpa will have passed. So in other words, it's a way of attempting to communicate really, really, really long time. Okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So for kalpas, we've been wandering around in this world of ignorance and delusion and suffering, you know, lifetime after lifetime in all sorts of forms and configurations and
god-awful messes. And, you know, supposedly the Buddha said, which do you think is more, the water in the oceans and rivers and lakes of the world, or the tears that you've shed in lifetime after lifetime of suffering? He said the tears. Shed more tears than all of that water. Okay, now, then 39 years ago, you arrived, this little package, and began to grow up in yet another messed up incarnation, right? Surrounded by ignorance and delusion and well-meaning people who were just as messed up as the rest of us. And then you got here, and finally some combination of miracles caused you to think, you know, there's got to be another way. And you began to look around, and you know, looking back, you can probably, you know, it wouldn't be a stretch to say, and I was sort of divinely guided to these different things that could help me begin to wake up and make sense out of all of this and make different choices and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So, yes, I think giving yourself a little bit of a break would just be downright sensible.
Okay. All right.
So, and I want to say one other thing about it, Jim, before I let you talk.
Sure.
And that is that what you describe is perfectly how egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, keeps a person trapped in suffering. You can't stand this. You can't do anything about it. You can't stand this. And here are all the reasons you can't stand it. But no. You can't do anything about it. But you can't stand it. It's awful. It's horrible. There's this and this and this and this. But no, you can't quit. You can't change it. Yeah?
Yeah.
So,
well,
yeah.
Another thing I thought was really interesting, because I've, like, you know, some people will, aspects will show up and just kind of take me on a whirlwind, like a new aspect showed up. And I'm like, whoa, what was that? And I just get curious about it. And I'm able to kind of process, map it backwards and be like, oh, that was going on, and that maybe that wasn't such a supportive thing for me to do or attitude for me to have. But today, you know, instead of just being fully wrapped up in the story, you know, this is bad, I was trying to be as curious as possible. And one thing that was interesting was I was like, okay, so what really is bad about this? And, you know, what do I hate so much about my boss? And I couldn't really... Like, I knew that I was suffering, but it was kind of like when the conditioning was put on the stand, it was just like, oh, well, because, it's just because. And I was like, well, but really, because why? And I mean, it feels really, really believable, but I can't, I mean, there's some things I could say, but then I'm getting into content and story, and they're just kind
and
of
you,
like,
and you know,
oh.
It's not true, even as you're, even as you're saying it and even as you're hearing it, you know that's not really what's going on, right? So, I mean, what you're describing is real practice. Right? You're seeing it and you're seeing through it. You're seeing it for what it is. You're seeing how it works. This is what we are here to do. And, of course, again, the vice that it gets people in is that it's horrible, you can't change it. Now, the reality is you've got two ways to go. One is you continue to do what you did today, which is to put it on the spot. Okay, well, what is the deal here? Now, I'm not, you know, I can't stand this. Why? What is actually so bad? And you begin to realize how you can disidentify from it, and when you go on the offensive, it has nowhere to go. So this is really good. The other thing, of course, that you could do is quit. You could quit. And what I think you know is, and then you would go down the street and you would find another job, and in a very short period of time, of course, it would torture you unto death for having done that. Right, because that's so stupid. It's a good job, and you're never going to find a better one, and it was all your fault anyway, and I can't believe you did anything so moronic. Right, then you get another job, and, of course, it sets about recreating the same thing in the new job.
Yeah, that. I mean, I could clearly see that, like, all these other jobs I've been in, I get angry at the you know, outside of work I'm fine, but in the job I'm just, I get angry and triggered, and you know, so today I was just thinking, it just seems like it'd be better for my health to just live in a tent or a ditch than just be this unhappy 8 hours a day every day. And
and of course, Jim, that is illusion as well, right? Because as soon as you move into that tent, it's going to start in on you about that. The only, you know, the only reason that you're happy outside of work is because you're being sufficiently tortured at work.
But
getting us, if that's, I mean, that's one of its biggest joys, is getting us to believe that what we're experiencing is circumstantial. If the content were different, the process would be different. And that is a vast, huge, enormous lie. It wouldn't. The process is the process. And our only hope is to see through the process. So the only thing that's actually going to help your health is to see through that process and stop it from happening to you.
Okay. Can I ask just one more question?
Sure.
Can you just say a word? When I've called in before, I've, for some reason, I am scared to listen. I'll listen to all the other archives, but I won't listen to the ones that I'm on. And I'm scared because it's something about hearing yourself talk, and also I can recognize that I'm trying to be clever or something. Like, so I don't.
That's a story. The reason that you're made afraid to listen is because you will hear the information that you're being given. First of all, you'll hear that there's nothing wrong with you. You sound like what you are, perfectly intelligent, articulate individual who is doing awareness practice. Now, this is not information that that system that's controlling you wants you to have. So that's the first piece of it. The second piece of it is, you once you start listening, you'll hear new things. Okay, you'll hear new things that you're saying, and you'll hear new things that I'm saying, and that will begin to affect you. You'll begin to take in guidance. You'll become eager to put things out there, get information back so that you can apply it. It'll move you to a new place in your practice. All of those are bad news for the story-generating survival system.
Okay.
Just screw up all your courage and, you know, punch that button and sit there and just watch. I mean, it's going to try to humiliate you. It'll try to distract you. It'll be fascinating. And so just chart it, process map it, watch it do what it does, and then listen again. Until you can really hear what you're saying and you can hear what it's doing and see it for what it is.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Sherry.
You are so very welcome. Let me know, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good night, Jim.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jim. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to listen to a special message, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Barbara calling from Australia.
Well, hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm just trying to keep my commitment to keep calling in.
Good.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a lot happening in my life too, which is challenging. So I thought that was probably another good reason to call in.
Uh-huh. Can you say a little bit about that?
I said quite a few months ago when I called in, I had, there was instability in my home situation.
Uh-huh.
And there's been a sudden change there where it looks that I have to move out.
Whoa, you had to move out of your home?
Yeah. My landlord had wanted me to stay and I'd been trying to find someone to move in, and it had been difficult for quite a while, and sort of quite out of the blue, some people turned up that wanted the house and she's asked me to leave. So it's presented a nice big opportunity for practice.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
And you have found another spot?
No, I haven't even started looking, actually. What I noticed happen was that initially I felt really upset, and then I felt really scared, and then I felt really panicky, and that kind of, you know, the urgency and then I spoke up with my landlord about her lack of notice and a few things about how it happened that I didn't feel good about, and I don't know, something just shifted in me where I've sort of shifted. I'm either just completely gone into denial or I'm in center.
say that again. I'm sorry.
I feel that I've either just gone completely into denial or I've just shifted into center, and I'm just trying to not panic and not get urgent and not respond from that place. And I did some research to find out what my rights as a tenant were, and that really helped.
And so you can't be just thrown out on the street.
No, I can't. And I'm not, she's offered, there's lots of safety nets that have been offered to me. I can see that life is really kind of there supporting me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a big upheaval, and because of my health stuff, things like moving house are like not great. not easy, and they're not preferable. So I was trying to avoid that having to happen. And there's an ongoing kind of bit of a gridlock in my personal relationship. That's not really, there's a lot of situation where my needs and my partner's needs seem to just almost be in direct opposition to each other, and that's caused a lot of a lot of challenge also.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
so you've got all the big stressors going on simultaneously.
Yeah, and considering that, I feel like I'm doing amazingly well. I just this morning was thinking, this same combination of circumstances happened for me about 20-something years ago, and, I pretty much had a complete breakdown. And my health is completely, collapsed. And it was, I guess, also the beginning of my, more serious spiritual practice. So it was good to remember that and to actually see how well I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
With a similar set of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a great deal to feel good about, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I've had times this week, you know, where I've really, it hasn't just been an intellectual exercise. I've really sort of felt something inside of me that knows that I'll be okay whatever happens.
Yeah.
It's sort of, yeah, I've just felt like I've seen the truth of that, and the promise of practice, you know, that the more I keep practicing, the stronger that'll be. You know, the external circumstances, yeah, they'll create challenge and, you know, they might be unpleasant, but they won't cause this kind of suffering that they have in the past.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the, I mean, to me, that's everything, to know that I'll be all right no matter what. That's everything. Because what we're taught to do is try to get all the externals in place so that if I have enough money and I have all the right stuff around me and then, you know, whatever that is, I have job security and good health insurance, then I'll be all right. And there's just no security in that, not at all. And very little comfort once we realize that those things cannot give us what knowing I'll be all right no matter what gives us.
Mm. I mean, while I say that, and I do feel like I've really had glimpses of that, at the same time, you know, at night I'm clenching my jaw and I think I'm probably grinding my teeth. So, you know, there's some, and I guess that's something also I wanted to bring up around, you know, I feel like during my conscious waking time, I'm really working with, you know, not believing the voices, not listening to the voices, not sort of just staying out of that whole story of the panic and the disaster and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact then, you know, once I go to sleep, obviously it all starts to come out.
Yes.
Yeah, I just wondered if you could say anything about that.
Well, it's true. It's a true experience that we can... we can direct our attention consciously when we're awake, and we can put our attention where we want it to be, and that's on not indulging stories of panic and hysteria and, oh God, what if, and then we go to sleep, and that ability to direct the attention goes to sleep, and so the attention just goes back to the habitual patterns. And that's a tough one because it takes time before the whole system shifts over into a new orientation. Now, if that is not, what if, isn't indulged in the waking hours over time, the system changes, will change, and it won't. That won't be where it automatically goes when we're not paying attention any longer. So, you know, for a while in practice, if we're not consciously directing the attention just slides off into whatever suffering place that it habitually goes to. So it could be, you know, it's even fantasizing about a future in which everything goes exactly the way I want it to go, which, as we know, those kinds of things start off really upbeat and happy, and then they eventually slide around into a place of suffering. So, but conditioning, you know, that habitual pull into conditioned stories and that sort of thing, you know, if we're not right there paying attention, that's where it goes. Then we practice for a while, and it feels like the habit is to be present. So now attention is in present, and it
it takes a fair amount of distress to provide the kind of unconsciousness that will draw attention into one of those suffering kinds of places. So, you know, if it's if something blows up in a relationship or a job or health or whatever, then that level of stress can throw people into old places, we would say. But for the most part, people are going along practicing, and attention is learning to stay present with what is. And over time, that learning to stay present throughout the day begins to carry over into sleep as well, into nighttime, because that the karmic conditioning is not being reinforced in the same way. So it's starting to lose its grip. The habit is to be present. So then person will begin to notice that the dreams have a different tone. Going to sleep, waking up has a different tone, waking up more relaxed. The dreams are more, we could say, cheerful, for lack of a better word, right? And then so we watch that progression. But right now, you're in one of those places where there's so much going on that will activate karmic conditioning. It's not being able to pull you in during the day, but boy, as soon as you lose the ability to focus your attention at night when you go to sleep, it's right there.
Yeah.
Anytime we're in a weakened condition, that's when it has the ability to pull us into old patterns again.
Yeah, I really see that with my health. You know, when I'm having a bad day with my health, it's like everything just tumbles. You know, all the old thinking kind of starts kicking back in, and you know, it just feels like such an unfair situation. It's like then when I start to feel a bit better, everything's easier.
Yes.
Practice is easier. The voices aren't as strong. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that you could do if you have the technological ability to do this is make recordings that remind you of the reality that you really live in, and they can be as simple as what I know is that I'll be all right no matter what. All kinds of things might happen, and I can be with myself and take care of myself. I know how to direct my attention to the life that I want, and the life that I choose is peace and comfort and well-being, regardless, you know, that kind of thing. And you just get it on a loop and play it while you're sleeping, so that when you come into lighter levels of sleep, you hear it. You know, in the beginning, it may wake you up. And that's fine. You just listen to it and you go back to sleep. Or when you go to bed at night, you're listening to that. You fall asleep to it. You wake up, it's still going. And so what you're doing is practicing at this point around the clock.
Right, okay. I do have audio teachings on my iPod that when I'm having difficulty sleeping, I'll start listening to and I'll go in and out of sleep and they'll just be going on and... So, but to do that, I haven't done it with a loop of my own recording. So
yeah, and that's what to me I suspect and hope that that's what will make the difference, because what you're doing is staying in that place of I'll be all right no matter what.
Yeah.
Somebody else's voice, their teaching, you know, it's just more good ideas that. I mean, when we're there and present, we can say, oh, yeah, that's true. I agree with that. Yeah, that's very helpful. But in that weakened state or when we're sleeping, that kind of thing, that mechanism that says, oh, yeah, that's true. I believe that is not there. But the sound of our own voice and that message that we are practicing directing our attention to, that will resonate.
Right. Okay. I'm going to do it.
Good. You do it, and you let me know, okay? I think that this is critical practice, and I'm really eager to have people try it and let me and let other people know what the result is.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. Right, and I'll tell you, there'll never be a better time, right?
Absolutely. Like, no, yeah. I'm wanting to fill up every waking moment with, you know, directing my attention to practice. And so
yeah,
if I
now,
can do it,
right. You can do it all night long, too.
Yeah. Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah, good. Good. All right. Thank you so much, Barbara. Take care.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. Bye.
Bye.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us, Barbara. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there?
Huh. And hear strange sounds.
Yes, let's try the next one. Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry, Michael, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. I just before I launch here, I just want to say life is very, very good. And thanks to the practice. Yeah, thanks to the practice and all the opportunities, so thank you.
You are welcome. Thanks for availing yourself of all those opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, participation is key.
It is. So, it's this big secret, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. I am looking at a process, and I could use some guidance. The process is that I'm participating in something. Right now, the content is practice and all the opportunities. Mm-hmm. And what starts happening is I start believing I don't belong. I'm hearing that message from conditioning. I don't fit in. I'm not good enough.
Mm.
So, like with facilitating or with the 300 for 1,000,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not enough. And I'm aware that that's conditioning. And somehow some part of me gets hooked into it. And so what's happening is I am still participating and I'm just uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
So I'm, So I have this, I have feelings of, what I just said was stupid, and everybody here wishes I'd go away, and I, you know, those thoughts, and a lot of uncomfortable.
So you were invited to the party, but the voices say, yeah, but nobody really wants you here. And so you sit over on the edge of everything and listen to the voices instead of actually being there, even though technically you're participating. It's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, if people didn't want you at the party, they actually wouldn't let you come. That's the part that we forget when we're listening to those voices. And, you know, there are a couple of things about it. One that I can never be sure about. Is it a young person who's listening to the voices and feels bad? You know, it takes a person back to kind of preteen or, you know, the junior high sort of. You're not on speaker, are you?
No. Does it sound funny? I'm not.
Well, it's just I've got this echo all of a sudden that wasn't there before, so I was hoping it was you and not me. You know how that goes.
It could be me, but it's not speaker.
I'm
not on speakerphone.
And it wasn't there when we first started talking, so it's probably Michael. Not right either. So, you know, it could be a young person. And if it's a young person, then that young person can be reassured, right? So the mentor can come in and say, don't be silly now. You're listening to those voices again. You know what those voices are. You don't have to believe them or listen to them. They're just blah, 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 whatever the mentor says. And the young person would be reassured and the confidence would come back. The other possibility is that, and that's the one that conditioning is actually supportive of, when what's really going on is that conditioning is talking to conditioning. So you, Catherine, get identified with karmic conditioning. Karmic conditioning starts talking to karmic conditioning. So the voices of self-hate are now talking to karmic conditioning. It's taken over you, so you're going along with it. You're basically saying, oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I know. And Catherine actually isn't anywhere around. Right? She's being held captive in a dark room somewhere.
So conditioning's talking to conditioning, and they're having this little process, and I'm having the feelings from that.
Exactly. And that's the one that's going on when mentoring and reassurance doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So people will say, well, you know, I talked to the mentor and nothing happens or nothing changes. Well, it doesn't change because they're identified with karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's I'm working on this book on resistance now, and that is that piece of information is why I wanted to do the book, and it's darn near impossible to communicate, at least for me. You know, because people are so used to being identified with that ego place. You know, that I it's just me. I think it's me. Yeah, it's me. What do you mean it's not me? And yet it's not. And the way we know the difference is I know how I feel when I'm at center. And this is not how it feels. Therefore, I can conclude that,
I'm identified,
I'm identified. It's got me. Yeah. It's taken over. It's looking out through my eyes. It's talking through my mouth. These are its thoughts, and the only way that I can have a sense that that's the case is I can recall what it's like to feel centered. It's not this.
Yeah. You know, it's hard. I'm just thinking it's hard for me because I might recognize the thoughts, but if I'm having the bodily sensations, if I'm have the feeling of anxiety or shame, you know, the physical sensations I associate with that, it's really hard to know that it's not me.
Yes.
It's like those feelings.
And of course, the not you, and I think you just made this distinction. The not you is the story. It's the meaning.
Say again. Okay, I think I'm lost.
Okay. So the sensations are happening in the body that we call Catherine.
Right.
The meaning and the story are happening in conditioned mind.
Oh, okay.
So if you were centered and you were feeling those sensations in your body, it would be a completely different thing.
You're right. Yeah, I see that. Okay. Okay. Well, I was, when you were saying, is it conditioning or is there a little one actually believing this, a part of yourself, or is it conditioning talking to conditioning? This morning I was recording while I was headed for work, and I was feeling this anxiety about the job and just different things. And the mentor came in with, "You absolutely belong with me, and you absolutely belong in the universe, and you belong." And I hadn't even been talking about belonging. And everything changed. Everything changed. It's like, I don't know how the mentor knows this stuff. How did the mentor know that that's really what I needed to hear? Because I wasn't even talking about that. But the whole thing changed. I had a great morning. You know, it just, everything went, that was exactly what I needed to hear. So that was probably some just maybe young part of me.
Yes.
Is what I'm thinking. That was, okay, yeah.
Yeah, or
I was reassured with that. Uh-huh.
Or the you know, there is a person, right? There is a person. There is life in a form that we call Catherine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it could be that that's who's there, and just being bombarded by stories and past, you know, karmic conditioning is attempting to get hold of this person, and she's on her way to work. Yeah, it could have been somebody young, and it could have been just that human being. You know, you know what I mean? The sensitivity. Yeah.
Okay.
And isn't it wonderful? Let's just stop and underline the miracle that it is. That we don't actually have to do anything. You know, in the Bible, where it says, knock and it'll be open, seek and you'll find, ask and you'll... that's what it's pointing at. That's a universal truth that's being pointed at. So, you know, you could be driving along to work and you realize, oof, this was not being my best morning. It would be possible just to say, mentor, what do I need to know right now? What am I missing here? And the wisdom, love, and compassion would be there.
Mm-hmm.
In essence, you did that without actually asking, because you turned on the recorder.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing. It's such a gift.
Mm-hmm.
To know
and it explains why karmic conditioning works so very, very, very hard to distract us, so that we don't have that recorder, so we don't turn it on, so that we don't have the quiet space where the mentor can reach us, because it's from dark room to light room in one split second when we're open and available and the mentor actually has access to us.
Yeah, and also doesn't want us participating in practice where we might be inspired to call the radio show and
precisely.
Ask for guidance and
yes.
or
yeah.
you know, on a conference call with Sangha.
Yep.
And hearing
yeah. And here's something for everybody who you know that you don't belong is not an unusual story. I think you
mm-hmm.
probably know that. And
yeah.
So this is the little thing that I want everybody who whoever hears that story to remember. You don't belong translates into isolation and separation. So if you don't belong with us, if you don't belong with the world, the only place you do belong is with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I mean, we know.
Mm-hmm.
It never has our best interest at heart, right? It's not saying
correct.
You don't belong to save you from some horrible disappointment or some big humiliation. It has one purpose, and that is if you have nowhere else to go, you'll go with karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's counting on. And so, you know, the response is, well, I may not belong there, but I sure as heck don't belong with you. So get
mm-hmm.
thee behind
yeah.
me, Satan.
Right. Given the choice, I'm going to go with participating.
That's exactly right. And what you learned in this, which is I do belong with the mentor, and the mentor is welcome everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have the
mm-hmm.
best date in the world for any occasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure. Well, when this, and so what I'm thinking of is just reassurances, and also like the next time I'm in a situation where I know it's going to tell me you don't belong. Okay, so I'm participating again, and
mm-hmm.
I know it's coming, so I just stay very aware.
Exactly.
That's what's coming up, and just know that story is going to try to play. It's going
yeah.
to try to
help and the other thing that we can know, we can watch ourselves and know when we need to have that recorder at the ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for some people, it's waking up first thing in the morning. For some people, it's on the way to work. For other people, you know, it's halfway through the day. I'm just, you know, I can make it through 3 hours or 4 hours or whatever it is, and then I need a booster shot. You know, or I need to decompress on my way home from work, or I'm gonna kill everybody in the house. You know, whatever it is, we know when we're most vulnerable, most likely to get identified, and when we need to come back to the support of the mentor and conscious presence.
Mhm. Mhm. Right, and I'm seeing that I can prepare. So
yes.
I can be on the recorder before
exactly.
I ever get to the group or, you know,
exactly.
however I'm participating, I can get on the recorder and just
yeah.
be ready.
Yeah, yeah. I take 10 minutes before I get on that conference call to spend with the mentor. So I
mm-hmm.
now I've got the perspective. I got the real story here. I'm not waiting for karmic conditioning to come in and tell me one of its stories.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Proactive.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You are so welcome. I'm so glad you called.
Me too.
Yeah. All right. Good night.
And I'm so glad for. I'm so grateful for this radio show. It's just
oh,
a lifesaver.
Me too.
Thank
me
you.
Too. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So thanks to you and Michael. Okay.
Uh huh. Good night. Bye bye.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. It was a fun conversation, Sherry.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, that these were, I like this. There were a lot of different kind of aspects of practice that we explored this evening.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So we are just under 3 minutes now. Would you like to talk to another person, or shall we call it a night?
You know, why don't we call it a night? Because what happens is that we tend to go over, and then I think things get cut off, and then that's not very good.
Yes.
So I've had a lovely time. I hope you
have. I've had a really fabulous, privileged time.
Yeah, and so we'll just leave it at that and plan to get together next week.
Fabulous. Thank you, Sharon.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Good night.